is Mr. Mark Dean, broadcasting live worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural Wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America. And on the other end of the line, we have
Randy.
We have the gentleman from the great state of Missouri, Randy England. Hello, Randy England.
You pronounced that correctly, Missouri.
Yeah? I've been watching a lot of TV shows with people with... is that a southern accent? I don't mean, that's the middle of the country, though, almost, isn't it?
It's kind of in the middle, so I don't know what it is. To me, it's just normal, so I don't pick up anything.
It's just normal, and everybody else is strange. Yeah, you did an interview with our friend across the pond, Bernie, in England the other day, didn't you?
I did today. I talked with him, and he was remarking about how much he enjoyed hearing me say Missouri. You know, not all Missourians pronounce it that way. I think the people toward Kansas City and St. Louis, which are on both ends, tend to look down upon us. the hillbillies that pronounce it Missouri, but we don't care.
Yeah, Kansas City, it's a great place because you can invoke the Mann Act or any number of federal statutes by crossing the street. And the street is called State Street, isn't it?
State Line, they call it.
State Line Street. I've heard it referred to while there as just State Street.
Yeah, well, if you cross the street, you'll be in Kansas. That's right.
You know, I played a gig. I used to play gigs there. I played in Lawrence, Kansas, and I played in Kansas City. I can't remember if it was Missouri or Kansas. It was very close to State Line Street, so it was... you know, you could have hit a rock the other state. But we played this club in probably 1987. It was an all-ages club called Jazzafraz. I really love that name. And it was one of three out of the like 700 or 800 gigs I played in my life. It was one of the probably two or three times we got paid not to play. And it was kind of an interesting scenario because we showed up to play. There was an opening band when we got there. They were playing, and they, about halfway through their set, you know, they were playing like a 45-minute set, like halfway through their set, firemen and police ran into the building and said, "Gas leak, we have to evacuate." And, like, they opened the door, and, like, you could just smell natural gas like your head was in an oven. It was so strong. And everybody evacuated. And we didn't play, but everyone left, so the guy couldn't give the money back to everybody, so he paid us, you know, anyway, so we'd have gas money. But it turned out what happened was this building, the club, it was upstairs, it was kind of like, it was not a bar, it was like, you know, place with fluorescent lights and like pool tables, like a youth hangout kind of place. And in the same building, there was an abortion clinic, and somebody who was anti-abortion got like a gallon of the liquid they used to scent natural gas, because natural gas doesn't have any scent. So they put like a couple parts per billion of this kind of rotten eggy smell into it. So, you know, you can tell if there's a gas leak and, you know, get it fixed and not blow up or asphyxiate. So somebody got like a gallon of the stuff that they used to scent natural gas and poured it through the mail slot of the abortion clinic.
Wow. You know, if you had a gallon of that, you could probably prank for the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, it was like, it was the strongest natural gas smell I've ever smelled in my life. And I've been around gas leaks. And, you know, there was no natural gas. It was pretty pretty mind-blowing. And then there was, let's see. Okay, I'll go on to the next one. But comments, questions, do you remember that? Did you hear about that in the papers?
I didn't, but I lived in Kansas City from 78 to 86.
Yeah.
Am I cutting out on you?
Yeah.
78 to 86.
Well, I'll make a teaching hospital moment out of this. Those audio cutouts, that's what we're trying to get rid of in this thing we're making called Fiendphone. So go to fiendphone.com. That's F-E-E-N, like Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, and then phone, like a telephone, P-H-O-N-E.com. Fiendphone.com. We're raising money to create a podcast and radio specific voice over internet utility. And I think we have a good chance of pulling it off. We've gotten about $475 in donations of the 20,000 we're seeking in the first day, in the first 24 hours. And interestingly, of the seven people who've donated, three of them were attorneys. Now, what does that say? Do attorneys want more clear speak in the world, do you think?
Well, there's lots of good guy attorneys. I want for my donation, I want the software to have some built-in speech recognition, so that it'll pick up the right words. And so, if a statist tries to use this for their podcast, it will. I don't know what it should do.
It should just make it sound like Skype. It won't not work, but it'll just not work as well as it will for freedom-loving people.
So we'll only broadcast at like 9 KBS or whatever.
Yeah, instead of like, 32 or 64. Yeah, I like that. So it'll sound like an old landline telephone.
Sounds like an old AM radio.
Yeah, no, like an old landline telephone, which sounds even worse than an old AM radio. And we're on AM radio, so we have to be respectful of AM radio. But we're also on an FM station tonight in Wyoming. But they pick up only the second hour, so there's no reason to address them directly and the people of the great state of Wyoming.
Hello, Wyoming.
Until the second hour of the show. Yeah. So so let's see. The other times I got paid not to play, one was in like almost my hometown, Fredonia, New York. It's one town over from Westfield, New York, where I grew up. And we played there once, and it was great because it was like people I actually like went to high school with got to come see me in this great rock band. We came back the next year, and we showed up, and I guess what had happened is somebody in my band the previous year had slept with a woman who had some connection to the bar owner. I don't know if it was his wife or daughter or cousin or what, but he was unhappy about it. But he paid us. Like, we showed up and the door was locked. We knocked on the door and it opened up, and it was like, it was just the bartender. And he said, this is for you. And he hands us an envelope, and it had $200 cash in it, which was our guarantee. And then he gave us a case of beer and said, "You're not playing tonight." And we were like, "Cool." And, we went to my house where I'd grown up, and spent the night and had a party with some people who'd come and showed up to see us. We didn't get to play. And let's see what happened. I, spent the night with a woman that I'd met from my hometown or like area, but I'd never met her before. I met her that night. And my mother said, "You're not sleeping under my roof." So we went out in the barn. And, the next morning I woke up, under a blanket with this gal, and my mother was standing over me saying to this woman, "Jesus may have been born in a barn, but no son of mine is going to sleep in one. Get the hell off my property."
But except for that, it was a really good trip though, right?
Yeah. That girl ended up moving to San Francisco with me and, living with me for a while. But I don't know what the moral of this story is, or the lack of morals of this story, but I think we're going to talk about New York State. And, I talked last night about how it was considered the burned over region in the 18 and 1900s because so many evangelists had gone through there and preached to everybody one by one, like on their farm porch doorstep, that there was no one left to convert. It was burned over. And I kind of want to do that with audio. I want to just preach to everybody to get audio perfect to the point where there's no one left to convert. Because a lot of people think, oh, good enough is good enough, And I don't know, my ears are more sensitive. And the thing is that even people who can't identify and say, "That's great audio," or "That's not good audio," subconsciously, they still know the difference. And if it's really good audio, like everything else the same, content, person speaking, what they're talking about, if the person listening has an interest in all that, they're going to listen more often and for longer each time if the audio is better.
That has to be true. It doesn't even matter. I mean, the content is one thing, but if your voice sounds like, say, Morgan Freeman, people will just give you credibility just when you recite a nursery rhyme. And I think exactly the same applies to just a good quality sound. You just simply lend yourself credibility and you sound serious. You don't sound like you're monkeying around. You don't sound like you're talking on the telephone.
Yeah. And, an interesting thing about that is that with video, with film and video that has audio also in it, when you're watching a movie or watching a video someone made on YouTube or something, People don't realize this, but subconsciously it affects people's enjoyment of stuff. The audio quality is a lot more important than the video quality because, you know, there's kind of this trend in video making from probably the 80s on. It came out of having, like, you know, kind of intentionally grungy handheld looking video. You know, it came out of like independent films from the 1970s and early 80s of like Richard Kern and Nick Zedd, you know, the, what did they call that school of filmmaking? I don't know, but it was really like, it was most of the topics of it were so extreme, like, you know, you couldn't even rate it X. It was beyond that, but it was not pornography. It was just like sex and violence and debauchery and anti-religion and anti-society. But their filmmaking style was really kind of neat, and I liked it. And it was all done with like Super 8 film cameras, handheld, and they kind of created this whole new style that has been like copied and homages done to it a lot in first in MTV and then in probably Quentin Tarantino, Pulp Fiction, stuff like that. And then in kind of in advertising and then kind of in YouTube and in new media. And this handheld kind of shaky style of videography, you know, I mean, Blair Witch Project would be the ultimate best-selling example of it probably.
Found footage films.
Yeah, yeah.
You're saying that even if you paid attention, you'd probably find that even though the video is deliberately amateurish, the sound is probably very good.
Yeah, the sound is more clear than the video, for sure. Yeah, it's more important to people's overall perception of the professionalness and watchability of something.
That's interesting.
Because, you know, you can't blink your ears. You can blink, you can close your eyes. I wrote this article called "I'd Rather Be Blind Than Deaf" when I was 18 years old. It was published in the local newspaper, and it still sums it up. It's like, sound is more important to me. You're always listening, even when you're asleep. And, you know, it's good to be able to see stuff, but hearing gives you more information and is more of a direct line to my heart.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
And I know that went out on air. I meant it to. Because I know Jack Johnson might be listening. And if he is, we've lost the feed. And it's back. See, that's what Fiend Phone would take care of. You there, Randy?
I am here. The Wampus Cat is here.
That's so loud. You gotta do that a little further away from the mic. That's funny, man. I forgot about the Wampus Cat.
Yes, he's here.
Yeah, I like went to all this trouble to make up wrestling animal names for all of the co-hosts or have them make them up and then like never use any of them. Except the Davy the Shiny Badger, because he does shiny badges.
Everybody's jealous of Davy getting such an appropriate name.
Well, and it just came out of his tongue. Like I asked him on air, you know, I said, well, I'm the Iron Hamster, and, you know, somebody else is the blah, 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 and what do you want to be? And he's like, just like that. He was like the Shiny Badger. He's really good with, I mean, the guy makes T-shirts with slogans on them and sells them for a living. He's really good at that kind of stuff.
See, it was a fit.
He was a what?
It was a good fit.
I thought you said he was a fed. See, that's the problem with Skype. It kind of like broke you up and didn't get the whole syllable, and it sounded like you said he was a fed. And Davi is as far from a Fed as you could possibly be, I think.
At least I didn't say something that had to be dumped or something like that.
No, no. You never would. You're a good Catholic boy. You're a choir boy. Were you an altar boy?
I was. And not only was I, but it was back when the Mass was in Latin, so I had to learn those responses. It was pretty hard.
Spit some Latin for me, please.
Ave Maria.
Come on.
Gratia plena.
Okay.
Yeah, you know.
Keep going. Give me a paragraph or two in Latin.
Oh, I don't remember that stuff anymore. We also have some Greek left over from the real old days.
Yeah, go ahead.
You probably heard of Kyrie eleison.
Kyrie eleison. Yeah, drop some mad Greek on me, brother.
That's all. Well, the second line is Christe eleison, and the third line is Kyrie eleison, and you said, Lord have mercy, Christ have mercy, Lord have mercy. They have that in the Mass every Sunday.
Yeah, tell me something I don't know. Tell me, do the Lord's Prayer in Latin or Greek.
Yeah, I can't do the Pater Noster much past the Pater Noster, so it's we're talking 50 almost 50 years ago.
So you asked me if I had a copy of that article that I wrote when I was 18.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you said, did you save the file? And I was like, file? I wrote that on a typewriter, man, a manual typewriter. I didn't have computers back then. And you said you had a computer back then. And I said, well, you're an attorney. You were first adopter. And what did you say?
I wasn't an attorney back then. I was selling fried fish. I worked for Long John Silver's for 8.5 years, cutting fish every day and battering it up, frying it and selling it. I didn't go to law school until I was 35. Probably because my grades were so low that I needed to put a lot of distance between dumb me and old me.
I knew a guy that became an attorney at age 55. He was someone I knew in AA in San Francisco, and he came in like to AA when he was really, really bad drunk, like homeless drunk and low bottom drunk, and he was like 47 or 48, and he got sober, and then around 50 or 51 he went to law school and became a lawyer at like 54 or 55.
Yeah, well, the upside of that is that by the time he gets sick of it, he'll be able to retire.
I knew a lady who went to my community college, and she was like 70 and got her associate in arts 2-year degree. And she went for 10 years. She took one course per semester. And after 10 years at like age 69 or 70, she got her AA. Speaking of AA.
What did she do with it?
I don't think she did anything with it. I think it was just for the sake of doing it and having something to keep busy with, you know?
Yeah. It can be expensive, but actually it's a lot
community college
is a lot cheaper, of course.
It's cheaper to go to community college than to not go to community college, I think, with all the grants you get. Yeah. Literally, it was like $25 per credit to go to this school, something like that back then.
This was a ways back. Yeah, that's what it was like when I went to school. Well, the first time, but that was in 1970. And it was super cheap. It was about, tuition was $250 a semester for, 15 hours or something.
You know what
it was a good deal.
You know what they call community college, don't you?
No, I don't.
High school with ashtrays. Although it probably doesn't have ashtrays anymore. That was my first experience with radio. I was a DJ on a 10-watt radio station, WJWK, in Jamestown, spinning music and telling tall tales between each set of songs.
10 watts going out there, huh?
Yep. We'll be back with more after this trip.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends to with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365.
HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
This is Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, and I'm coming to you from that habitable planet just outside of Alpha Centauri. And, you know, if you donate money to my projects, you can end up on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And the title of this show tonight is going to be The Golden Floppy Disk of Redemption. And there's an actual, there is an actual golden floppy disk, and I have a picture of it, and I'll post it. And if you donate to Fiend Phone from fiendphone.com or to the Freedom Fiends or buy buttons, which are on sale, $5 now instead of $10, you'll get on the golden floppy disk of redemption. So go to freedomfiends.com and check that out. And we have a caller. We take calls by appointment only. That's how we keep it so mellow around here. And we have Jeremiah calling from Arizona. How are you doing, Jerry?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Your mic sounds really good, man. What are you using?
I am using the one that you suggested me, that Audio Technica. I'm not sure the
it's the two,
model number.
2005 USB, man. And that mic is going to change the world. I did the same thing with mics that I did with guns, sort of. When I first got into guns, my wife bought a Glock 40 Model 23, and I was like, that looks like something a cop would carry. I want to get something else. And I bought something else. Carried it for a while, sold it, bought something else, carried it for a while and sold it. Every time I sold it in a hurry. So I had to sell it at a gun store instead of at a gun show, and I had to take a hit each time. So I probably lost $5,000 in doing that. Wow. Over a couple of years' time, 3 years' time. But I gained $5,000 worth of knowledge on personal firsthand experience on about 10 different handguns. But then I just ended up buying the same thing my wife bought the first day because Boston Tea Party said, you should buy this gun, you know. So he went with us to buy the guns. And, or he was at the gun show and we just asked him, you know, what should we get? And so, you know, you listen to experts. So I'm an expert on audio, and part of the way I've become that way is by buying and selling about 50 microphones in my life. And I've basically settled on three different mics. But if I only had a little bit of money, I'd only have the mic you have. And that's the one I recommend to everybody. And you can go to the Freedom Fiend site, and over on the right sidebar, there's a little image, a picture of a microphone. It says, get the mic our co-hosts use. And you can get that through the Fiend's Amazon link. And I get about 98 cents each time you sell one of those. But I don't recommend things I wouldn't use. That's how we keep it pure here on the Fiends. But yeah, I use that mic. And if you have money for mics, for general broadcast, I recommend the one I'm using, which is an RE20, which is, you know, the default, like most radio stations in the world have this mic. And then I also use a Shure Beta 57A for doing voiceover, because it doesn't sound as robust as this, but it's a little more clear and present danger. So, you know, you record audio for ads where every word has to be understood over music. It's better for that. So I pretty much only use three mics. And I also got like a nice condenser Rode mic that I use. You know, I don't know if I ever have to like record a string quartet or something. So yeah, I'm glad you got that mic and you sound real good on it, man. You'll sound better when we get Fiend Phone done, but you sound pretty darn good over Skype.
Yeah, I just watched your video on the Fiend Phone and it looks interesting. I'm kind of curious to see how it pans out.
It's the shortest video I've ever made. It's 80 seconds yeah. long, and it tells what it needs to, man.
Yeah, it's good. Short, sweet, and to the point.
Yep, and I recorded the voiceover for that with a Shure Beta 57A. That's a good example. So,
well, I'm new to the microphone world, and maybe we'll be able to 3D print these microphones soon.
Hopefully, man. Yeah. you actually can print microphones. Some really cheap cell phones, the microphone is actually printed onto the circuit board. You know, they don't sound very good, but yeah, they're just like little two-layer wafers of silicon, and they can act as a microphone.
That's interesting. Like an electrostatic speaker? Is it similar to that?
Yeah. Well, it's an electrostatic microphone, and pretty much any microphone will actually double as a speaker and vice versa. But speakers don't make good microphones, and microphones don't make good speakers. But there's actually a commercial product that's made for miking bass drums, you know, rock and roll drum kit. And it literally is a bass speaker that's made to fit over the front of a bass drum.
Yeah. Wow. I've got some of those little, I forget what they're called, but they're not actually speakers. They basically send the vibrations onto any surface that you place these exciters. That's what they're called. Have you ever messed with one of those?
No, I've heard of them, though. They're also called transducers sometimes.
Yes, yes. Really, really cool.
I mean, basically, the internal mechanism of them is a type of speaker, but they're not made for putting sound into the air. They're made for putting it into a solid surface.
Yes, yeah.
Yep.
Really cool.
Yeah, man. You said you're kind of new to Liberty, too, and you don't know a lot of people who are Liberty people. You only know one, right?
Yes. It's kind of an interesting story. I started listening to Free Talk Live in Afghanistan.
Were you in the service there, or you just liked to vacation in Afghanistan?
Yeah, it is beautiful. They just built a brand new Costco and a Walmart outside the gate, so it was nice. No, it's I was deployed there, and it was very interesting. Actually, there was a movie that covers the Free State Project, Libertopia, I believe.
Yeah,
is that the name of it?
Yep.
Yes. It was a wonderful documentary film, and that actually got me interested in it. And
now, how did you see that, and where? Did you see it on YouTube? Because the movie was done for like a year before she ever put it on YouTube. I think she was trying to sell it with a big distribution deal, and it didn't happen or something.
I think I did watch it on YouTube.
See, my thing with making media is like, I make it, and that night I want to share it with the world, which is why I'm not rich, you know, because I make good media, and I just don't like sitting around waiting for permission from some Moses-like gatekeeper to take it to the masses. I'm like, I'll do it tonight, man. And you know, I don't just like put it up on YouTube. Like, I'll actually like author a DVD with a DVD menu also, and then put it on the BitTorrents and things like that. You know, it's just, I was waiting for the internet when it showed up. You know, I got on it in 94. Yeah. I actually got on it like in 91 at the library, the San Francisco Public Library, using Gopher text chat, but got on it at home in 96, got on it at work in 94, and it wasn't like working in office. I was like washing dishes in like the first web cafe in the world, I think, in 94. It was a steak restaurant in San Francisco that it didn't succeed, I think, because they had the wrong business model. They didn't understand that people would want privacy, so they actually like had like four computer stations at the table. You eat your steak, but they didn't have the screen there. They had the screens up on the wall, so they thought it would be like participatory, like, oh, everyone will want to see what everyone's doing, you know, but no.
That would be a big mistake nowadays.
And now they should be called the NSA Cafe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, their motto could be, if you have nothing to hide, what are you worried about?
Yeah, really. No, that's nice to see, though, that you make art in whichever type of media that you use or create, you know, for consumption without, you know, necessarily looking for some kind of compensation at all times, you know. I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, well, also I've been kind of lucky because I've kind of had, I don't know if it's lucky, but like a combination of hardworking and smart and talented and lucky, because I've done a bunch of I've done 100 projects, you know, in the past 10 years or something, and three or four of them have actually made enough money that even years later, I'm still getting checks for them, you know, like $30 film school book and my DIY or die film. And then to a lesser extent, a couple other how-to books I wrote. And, you know, those checks are tapering off and getting smaller over the years, and I need to do some more paid projects from time to time. And I make a tiny bit at the Fiends, you know, like a couple $100 a month for working 60 hours a month. But, and you know, I'll probably put that all into Fiend Phone. I put it all into buttons for Porkfest, but yeah, I just like doing stuff and getting things out in the world. And I'd rather, if getting paid is an impediment to that, I don't wait around to get paid. I just do it.
Yeah, well, that's proof that hard work does get rewarded, and it's nice to see that.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Yeah, I've never said like what will make money. I mean, I've done projects. I want to do that I would do anyway for free and then try to monetize them afterwards. And sometimes it works.
Yeah, and that's it. Very nice when it does pay out. And yeah, I'm glad to see it. People like you and a lot of the Liberty radio show hosts and the media providers that are out there.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I'm trying to absorb everything I can, and there's a lot of it out there.
You could do a good podcast. You could do kind of I think you could do some interesting scripted kind of skit type stuff. You know, like a little 5 minute. I like the idea of a 5 minute podcast. I'm not saying I wouldn't listen to you for more than that. I would, but. You know, everybody tries to do like hour and a half podcasts. It's like, what, you know, somebody should just be doing like the fast food version of it, like the 5 minute one, the 3 minute one. You actually have done some. Can I talk about the calls you've done, or do you want to not?
Sure. Okay, yeah, that's great.
You have an alter ego, and you've called into Free Talk Live. Will you give us an example of your alter ego? Just even if it's a greatest hits, like a rehashing of something you did, just go into it. Just go ahead.
Hey, my name is Jimmy.
Hey Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
What's on your mind?
I got kidnapped by some illegal aliens this weekend.
Illegal aliens or like UFO aliens? What do you mean?
Well, they were illegal. They were from Tijuana.
Yeah, what'd they do to you? Keep it friendly. Keep it radio friendly. What'd they do to you?
Well, they took me out to eat. And we went to the park. We played a little hopscotch. They're good people. But you know, we did a couple other things I can't really get into on the radio. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What do you do for a living, Jimmy?
What does Jimmy do? I paint nails. I work at a nail salon.
Yeah. People's fingernails, or you paint like the nails that you use to build a house?
Well, mostly animals. I paint people's animals' nails. stay pretty busy.
Do the animals like it?
I don't know. I got an animal whisperer that works with me. He says they do.
So what are you going to do this weekend?
I'm not sure. Probably going to go hunting.
Yeah, what do you hunt?
Not just about anything. People, animals. I don't know. It just depends.
People?
Well, I didn't mean to say that. Did I say that?
But that's violating the non-aggression principle. We'll be back.
What is that, dude?
Oh, it's the same as the golden rule, man. Do unto others as you'd have others do unto you.
Now, Michael, when he catches them, he just paints their nails.
Oh, okay.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed, pie shape for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $5 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. A collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was me clearing my throat. This is Michael Dean. And welcome to my show. It's called Mike Chat, where we discuss cats, literature, religion, drama, politics, the police, and audio gear. And I've switched microphones. I was using an Electrovoice RE20, which is made in Burnsville, Minnesota, the home of our network, our glorious network, Genesis Communications Network. And I'm now using a Shure Beta 57A, which I'm told has more of a clear and present sound. And for some reason, people like that. It's part of the human condition. And Randy is human. And I think that our caller, Jimmy, is human. I'm not really sure. Are you there, Jimmy?
Yeah, I'm here. I think I'm human. Who knows? You know?
All right, what's on your mind? What do you want to know? What do you got?
Well, you know, I haven't told nobody, but me and my wife, Milford, have I talked about her? You heard me talk about her before?
We've not met, and I'm not familiar with her work. Let me know. Tell me about it.
She gets around. You never know. We just got married. We got two kids. We've been going out for a while. You know, my daughter's name is Grammaton. My son's name is Jar Jar Jr.
Yeah, which is unusual because your name is not Jar Jar. So why is he Jar Jar Jr.?
That's a good question. Let's move on. No, I don't know. I just like that name. Have you ever heard of the Jar Jar name before?
Yeah.
It's from a famous movie character. Yeah. Real.
He's the most hated character in the most beloved movie series ever. And I don't mean hated like he's an anti-hero. I just mean like nobody likes him and he's really highly annoying.
Well, in this household, we love him.
Okay.
You know, I got a nice painting that I did of him.
Is it on velvet?
It is. Yes, it is. It's it's Jar Jar, and he's in a go kart. It's pretty nice. I get bored. I like to draw beautiful paintings.
Do you ever draw on nails?
Well, nails? No, I ain't never done that.
I've seen ladies get fancy, paintings of like little trees and palm trees and stuff on their fingernails.
Well, I mean, I paint nails, but I ain't drawing Jar Jar on nails. You know, that'd be hard.
If someone asked you to, would you?
Oh, I'd probably do anything. You're talking about nail painting?
Yeah.
Maybe. It just depends.
So tell me something else. What do you
I'll
got?
Tell you what.
Tell me what.
Well, it's hard. It's hard to sell kids, you know. Well, me and Milford just got married. We got married at the local AutoZone. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful ceremony. The store manager was upset because we didn't tell him that we were going to get married there. We just kind of showed up.
Okay.
Had me a priest, and he was dressed like Luke Skywalker. Yeah. And we had like a nice monster cake truck, and it was real nice. My dog, his name is Han Solo. He walked the ring down the aisle. It was beautiful. I got lots of pictures. I'll show you. Real nice.
Yeah.
Real nice. I figured, you know.
How old are you?
37.
Yeah? Did you finish high school?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was a valedictorian.
Wow.
Yeah. You believe that?
If I believe that, I think you would have to say a lot about your high school.
Public education is the best.
So, what are your opinions on liberty and libertarians?
Libertarians? I ain't never met one that I liked, you know?
Do you like me?
You're all right, man. I think you're okay.
Yeah, I'm a libertarian. So now you met one. Now you met
dang
one.
It. Like,
yeah. Do you use the Bitcoins?
The Bitcoin. Do they work in those candy machines at the store?
They do if they're hooked up to a Bitcoin ATM, which is something I've seen in person at Porkfest. The tea lady running the tea room was using one.
The tea room?
Yeah, there was a tea. It was a tea tent, actually. It's Alexandra's Tea Room, it was called.
They have that Nestle tea?
No, this is like really high quality, handmade. I think it's 3D printed tea leaves or something like that. Yeah. We'll be back with more on hour two of the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Worms.
Worms. Let me get a worms from everybody. Go ahead.
Worms.
Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah! This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural, wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America. And this is Mr. Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster. That is my radio animal wrestling name. And we got on the other end of the inner tubes here, we have Randy England Esquire. And what is
the
your
Wampus Cat?
The Wampus Cat. Thank
That's
you.
That's right.
Yep. Yep. And we're going to talk a little more about Fiend Phone, the fabulous thing that I'm envisioning into being, which is how I do things. I mean, you know, I said at one point, yeah, I'm going to have a radio show. And this is like before podcasting. And then podcasting came along. I jumped on it in 2006. And I was actually putting short spoken MP3 things on the internet in like 1998. They had to be really short because bandwidth was a scarce commodity at the time. But yeah, man, I've been waiting for the internet since about 1974. And finally, it's around and I'm digging it. Jumped on it as soon as I could. Jumped on it and rubbed up against its leg. And I'm still doing that and touching the internet in special places every day. But first, we're going to talk a little bit with Randy about the law. And Randy is he's a good guy attorney. He used to be a bad guy attorney. He used to be a prosecutor for the state, which is, you know, well, it's kind of like when you go on Oprah or, you know, you're speaking at an AA meeting. The worse you were before, the more they like you now that they're good. At least that's how I feel about you, because I feel like you're the most improved player because you used to be a bad guy and now you're a good guy. And, you know, there's a lot of people who talk about the law in Liberty shows and radio shows and podcasts and chats and YouTube videos. And a lot of them don't know that much about the law, you know, or they live in this anarcho-libertarian fantasy. And I'm an anarchist and a libertarian, and so are you, Randy. But, you know, they kind of think that if they use these magic words that should work in a libertarian paradise or libpair, that they'll actually work and that the police will actually go, oh, you've cracked our code. And you know about how we sold everyone out for to the International Committee of the World, United Nations proto back in 100 years ago in somewhere, you know, and drank owl blood or whatever. No, that doesn't work, man. So tell me how it really works, Randy. What do the goons really do?
Well, you know, it isn't normal for a person to know about the law. It's kind of sick when you think about it. I mean, everything you really need to know about the law. Wasn't there a book somebody wrote about everything I needed to know I learned in kindergarten?
Yeah.
At some point. Well, that's the same thing with the law. All you should have to know about the law is that if you hurt another person, if you take their stuff or you hit them or you're bad to them, that's wrong, and yeah, you're probably going to be in trouble if you do something like that. And you know that. I don't even think you have to get to kindergarten before you know that. And what we have to know now to survive in this society is you know, practically obscene. And the only thing that makes it easier is that there's so much of it, everyone just gives up. I mean, why bother? I mean, you have to be sick in the head to really want to know all this stuff. I mean, I don't even know anything except criminal law, and I still have to look at the books sometimes. Well, anyway, one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit. You often hear in libertarian circles activists who are working hard to stop people from. I think the one brochure I've seen around is "Don't take the plea deal." Right? Have you seen that?
Yeah, and I think there's two organizations, and they have two different names or mottos, kind of like how there's Cop Block and Cop Watch, and Cop Block is the more I don't know if radical. Anti-cop. Yeah, well, I like cop lock, so I don't want to use the word radical because I guess that means I'm a radical. But yeah, cop watch is, you know, they believe this, the cops can be fixed, and they do like filming cops, but they're not as I don't like to use the word aggressive in this context, but yeah, they're not as I don't even know if the word's diligent, but yeah, they're not as radical, I guess would be the word. But I think that there's two things with the don't take the plea. I think there's don't take the plea, and then I think there's never take the plea. And I think they have slightly different tacks on it, and I think never take the plea is the more extreme one. And it's interesting that several high-level activists who've been active pimping one or both of those things have taken pleas at some point. And I'm not saying that they're bad people or hypocrites or anything. And, you know, when somebody's in a room and there's the government pointing its guns at your head, figuratively or literally, well, whether they're visible or not in the room, it's literal. They're being pointed at your head. And, you know, nobody really knows what they're going to do until they're faced with that situation.
I know. And I think it's really instructive when you see people like, well, there's a number of people that you've seen up in Keene, New Hampshire that have lesser matters, but you hear a good line being talked, and you know, don't do this and don't do that, and we're going to show them, and a lot of people, you know, they take that bold line, and I'm not criticizing that. I mean, if somebody wants to be a martyr for the movement, I mean, fine, just go into it with your eyes open. But then you see the same people, they get in there and then they see what's really going to happen to them, and they're going to spend, say, years of their life in prison, and all of a sudden they're taking the plea deal. And as far as I'm concerned, that just shows that they're not completely irrational on this thing.
It's easy to talk tough when you're not faced with the consequences of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And not that plea bargaining, the whole thing, you know, in some countries, plea bargaining is just simply illegal. They do not allow it at all for good reasons. I mean, there's a lot of horrible, horrible things about plea bargaining, but you know, and the way a plea bargain works, like if somebody comes to me and hires me to represent them in a, you know, an assault case, and the first thing I do is I file all the stupid paperwork with the court, and ask the prosecutor to give me all of the police reports and witness statements and all of this junk, and also send me, first thing I ask for is their recommendation. What do you want in this case? And they'll write back and say, well, if your client pleads guilty, I'll do this. And I get all of this stuff together, and then I, you know, first thing I do is I see how many holes I can poke in there. In their case and everything, and if I can come back and get, you know, a better deal, I want to go to my client with everything, and I also don't want to go to them with the offer that the prosecutor made. I want to go to them with the best possible deal I can get. Now, if the deal is I get them to dismiss the case, beautiful. You know, I don't even have to ask my client. I just get rid of it. But more often, you get concessions. Either you get concessions with a lesser offense, or you get concessions for a lesser punishment. You know, instead of going to jail, you're going to get probation and things like that. And first of all, it doesn't have anything to do with the lawyer. The lawyer just takes it to the client and says, okay, here are your options. If you plead guilty to this, this is what will happen. And then you say, but if you want to go to trial, you will probably X. X being win or lose, you know, depending. And if you lose, here is what will be done to you. And so it's always presented to the client in that way. And I'm sure that's what happened to, you know, these people, you know, who talking a good line, and then later on, they're taking a deal. And of course, you notice that they're taking a really good deal compared to, you know, what they were facing. They might have had decades in prison, and they ended up with a year, and half of that is suspended or something like that. So, you know, it is a huge difference. Now, that's the biggest danger with the plea bargain, is that prosecutors, I mean, they're encouraged to overcharge their cases so they can bargain the case down, And although there are ethical rules against this, they all do it, and you can never prove that they do it, but they do it. And the defendants, they're just being rational. When somebody comes to you and says, well, for example, in federal court, you know, you have a serious a drug case, drug distribution case, like cocaine or methamphetamine or something. You get a guy in there who, if he goes to trial, he's going to prison for 20 years if he's convicted. If he takes a plea deal, he'll get off with 10 years. Now, of course, there's one other thing he can do. If he's willing to snitch, they'll cut it in half again. He'll get 5. And faced with that, and somebody, you know, they may start out all huffing and puffing about how they're going to take this all the way and fight it to the end. But at the point where they become convinced that they're going to lose at trial, they go 20 years, 10 years, 5 years, I'll take the 5. And they often do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I never recommend that someone be a snitch or something, but it's my job to tell them, you know, what all the options are. And they usually make a decision that's going to come out best for them. You know, what can you say? I mean, you're not playing around when you're talking a 10 or 20 years of your life. I mean, that you better have some pretty powerful principles you're standing behind before you take that on.
What percentage of the time do people who snitch get murdered?
Small. Not often.
I'm kind of surprising. I'm kind of surprised by that. And I'm not saying, snitches sleep in ditches. But I'm just thinking, I'm just surprised that when, you know, somebody ruins someone else's life to get their life a little bit better, I'm surprised that people don't get killed over that more.
Well, I'm sure that some people do get killed, but most people don't. And once you know, one guy goes off to prison for his 5 years and the other one goes off for their 20 years, they take pains to send them to different federal prisons.
Yeah, but I mean, they're just sitting there in prison. I envision them, you know, Cape Fear style, just doing push-ups and just stewing in their resentment, you know, waiting for the day they get out and can wreak vengeance. But maybe I watch too much TV, man. Maybe I watch too much Southern Gothic kind of, you know, things like The Wire and True Detective.
It's usually not the snitch who ends up putting them in prison, because the feds don't file a case unless they've already got it pretty much slam dunk. Yeah. They're not very adventurous when it comes to filing cases.
Yep.
The snitch just puts the icing on the cake.
We're going to come back and talk about audio, and then we'll have more about the law. The law after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
That's the Wampus Cat, huh? All right.
This is Michael Dean. Yes, I am here.
So I've had questions from a bunch of people about this thing we're trying to build called Fiend Phone. We're going to get back to the law. We're going to talk to our counselor here, Randy England. But I've had questions, and people are like, well, you know, first question is, why do we need this? We have Skype. You can use Skype. So that's kind of like saying, I don't know, you know, why should anyone need a computer that's better than a Pentium 1? You know, Pentium 1's pretty good, but most people have exponentially more power in their computer now because you want things better. Skype has a lot of shortcomings. For instance, it's not truly duplex. Randy, talk with me a little bit, and I'll demonstrate what that means.
All right.
We're both talking at the same time.
We're both talking at the same time.
If you notice, it kind of cuts him off. Like, basically, it finds...
You can't hear both of us when we're both talking?
Yeah, you can, but it kind of, like, kind of doesn't sound that good. There was a big cutout in there. There's a lot of problems with Skype, because Skype and Blink, Mumble, TeamSpeak, any of these other things that are made for talking over the internet, none of them are made for podcasting or radio. They're basically made... they're not made for using a good mic in a good room with no background noise. They're made for using any mic down to like a $2 headset in any background, you know, lots of bad background noise, motors, machinery, etc. In a, you know, rooms that aren't sound conditioned, that have echoey walls. So they have a lot of sound, a lot of noise reduction, which sounds like a good thing, but it's not a good thing if you've got a good audio setup. And I've done a lot of research and figured out basically you can use a $50 USB mic, the Audio-Technica 2005 USB, or any similar USB mic, but that's the best one for the price. That's what our caller was calling in with before on Skype. You can use that mic, hang up a couple blankets, you know, just do something to deaden the sound a little bit. And you can talk in really, really high quality. You can get a great sound. And the limitation is the software you're using to connect to each other. And all of these different software things that you can get for free are made, they're not made for doing high quality two-way spoken audio. They're either made for having 20 people on a gaming team all yell at each other and being able to, you know, pick one out and make that the leader automatically based on who's louder. And deal with a lot of different criteria, different variable backgrounds, as opposed to being designed for working in a good room, which isn't hard to make. You don't need to do construction to make a decent sound conditioned room. I mean, a car is a decent sound conditioned room, you know? So the other thing is none of those things work point to point. They all work through a central server, which first of all has security issues. Like, yeah, Skype is encrypted, but it's encrypted through Microsoft and probably through the NSA. But we're not really trying to make something for telling secrets, because we're trying to make something for sharing for the public, for making a public media. And I'm not saying I have nothing to hide. I don't care if they hear me, because there are times I don't want them to hear me. But when I'm talking on the radio, I know they're listening anyway. So, the problem, you see, a lot of people don't want to open their computer up to a point-to-point communication, because there's security, I wouldn't say security issues, but security considerations, which is something we're going to have to deal with this. And also, just most people don't know how to trust something when it says, do you trust this to do this? You know, it's probably going to throw up a warning, because it's not something computers typically do. So having it go point-to-point saves a lot of the latency, shaves it off. Like there's about a half second of latency between when I talk on Skype, when the other person hears it, and that's a half second each direction. It can be longer depending on the internet connection. But that makes for a not conversational tone. Like it doesn't sound like you're in the same room. It's like one person finishes talking, and even if the other person immediately starts to respond, it kind of sounds like they're kind of slow and had to think about it a lot, you know? You know what I mean, Randy?
You mean that?
Yeah, but
yes, I do.
And there are software programs and moreover hardware devices that are specifically made for doing talk radio, but they cost a lot. I mean, the software costs, it starts at like $400 and the hardware starts at like $1,400. I actually have the hardware. I'm using it to connect to GCN. But I'm connecting my co-host with Skype. So we are looking to specifically make something like this. And I know how to do it. I know what has to be in it. I have a programmer that can do the programming. I've done a large project with him before. He's reliable. And we just need to get the money to do the work, man, to have the time to take off to do it. We'll be back with more.
Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to torrent
Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Yeah, this is Mr. Michael Dean from the Freedom
Fiends. The person
whom
you're trying to reach is currently unavailable.
That's too bad.
Please leave a
message. Yeah. All right, this is Michael Dean, and we're going to wait while we try to get Randy England back here, but I was going to talk a bunch anyway, so I'm just going to wing it. So I'm working on this thing called Fiend Phone, which is going to be, it's an Indiegogo campaign to raise an inordinate amount of money, or what a lot of people think is an inordinate amount of money, $20,000, but it's really not that much when you're paying programmers to do your bidding, because programmers, you know, generally make between, you know, $100 and $400 an hour or something. And a question that I've had from someone who is a moral supporter, I would say, of the project, but he had questions, and one was, you know, do you really think that you can get this programmer to do this and follow through? Because so this person had issues before where they'd hired a programmer to do something, paid them a bunch of money, and they didn't do it all. And first of all, you know, I generally pay programmers in steps when they get certain things done. Here's Randy. All right. Yeah. Randy, you there? We got you back? Okay. Well,
I am here.
Cool.
But I have lost my internet connection.
It doesn't sound like you've lost your internet connection.
Well, I'm talking to you over my data connection on my cell phone through a cheap little mic.
It actually sounds pretty good. There's some background noise. Sounds like a fan or something. But yeah, man, it's surprisingly good. And that's some audio advice I have is when you call into a show, if you have a Skype account where you have, you know, cell phone minute kind of things, call in on Skype. It sounds better than a phone. Phones are horrible. Skype is okay. And we're trying to build something better than Skype called Fiend Phone. So, you know, and somebody asked me, like, well, how do you know you can get this programmer to do this? And I'll tell you how, from experience, because I've worked on not a long term, but an intense 2 or 3 month project with him before. And you always want to go into battle, so to speak, with someone you've gone in with before. People always say, like, well, nepotism's horrible. People only hire people they know. And it's like, people hire people they know because they've worked with them before or someone's vouched for them and they know they can get the job done. And that usually, almost universally, has a lot more cachet in the real world than, you know, someone who looks good on paper. And Derek Slopey, the programmer that's going to work with me on this, and we may be hiring a second programmer too if it gets to be a lot, because he has a day job, he has a family, he has other projects. But, you know, he really committed hardcore and followed through in an intense way with this project we did before. It was a .bit thing for Namecoin called MeowBit. And,
yeah,
you know, if you don't know what Namecoin is, Namecoin was the first altcoin. It was the first spinoff of Bitcoin. And it's one of the only altcoins that actually does something other than imitates a currency or imitates a medium of exchange. And the thing that Namecoin does and allows for is decentralized domain registration, you know, because the government or, you know, corporations can take down, they can take your .com. You know, if you use a picture of Bart Simpson on your website, they say it's copyright violation. Or if you're, you know, helping people leak secrets about how horrible governments are, they can take your .com or your .net or your .edu or your .wherever. And somebody came up with this idea, this great idea. Actually, it was Aaron Schwartz, who's now dead because he was facing about 50 years for doing something with computers that shouldn't even be a crime. And he either hung himself or they hung him. I say the government killed him, even whether it was their hands or his hands, because, you know, it was like we were talking about plea deals before. So he and this other guy came up with this guy named Appomatto came up with this idea of decentralized domains over a blockchain. And Namecoin does it really elegantly and really well, but the problem is there really wasn't any way to view these domains for the average person, these .bit domains, until this guy named Jeremy came up with this thing called Free Speech Me, which I worked on that project. I was the cat herder and publicist for that, and I named that product. And then, but that only that was a plug-in for one browser. It was a plug-in for Firefox. So working with my friend Derek, we came up with a thing that was a – at first it was Windows only, but we were working on porting it for other systems, but basically ran out of money. Worked on this thing called MeowBit, which was a system-wide thing. It worked on any browser, worked on FTP, worked on email. And he worked so hard on that, man. He like did it, you know, did the first draft of it that sort of worked in – a couple days, and then perfected it over a couple months until it not only worked really, really, really well, it also did, he did something with the blockchain that's never been done. And this is, working with him is why I know he's really hardworking and he follows through. And I follow through too. You can ask anybody, you know, you can ask Ian Freeman, you can ask Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, or you can ask any of the fiends, anybody that I've ever done a project, whether they've seen me do a project. When I say I'm going to do something, I finish it. I go through all the way to the end. So I am the guy to get this done, and Derek is the guy to get it done with me. And the thing that he did with the blockchain, it's never been done, is he figured out how to do – he figured out and implemented how to give software update notification over the blockchain. So this program, MeowBit, you know, when he'd have a new version of it out, he would send a little – you know, transaction over the Namecoin blockchain, and a little, you know, a little thing would turn from green to red in the program, telling you that you it was time to update. And you know, there's a lot of software has things like that, like you get a notification balloon or whatever. But it could be hacked. But over a blockchain, it's, I don't want to say unhackable, because that is a scientifically inaccurate term for anything, but it'd be much harder to hijack. Basically, they'd have to, you know, it'd be really hard to do without getting physically getting a hold of his computer and knowing his Namecoin wallet password.
Didn't so. Didn't the Namecoin, it was putting the domain names for the .bit domains into the blockchain. Is that right?
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem like eventually somebody's going to have to figure out how to do the same thing without having to go to be a .bit? In other words, copy the current domain name server contents into the blockchain where nobody can touch it.
Well, they were really smart in not doing that, I think, because
why is that?
That you're an attorney and you have to ask why that'd be a bad idea.
Yeah,
because it would open you up to about 1,000 entities that have 1,000 lawyers on staff all trying to sue you.
It's just a mailing list. It's a phone book.
Yeah, but the phone book of the internet, other than the .bit phone book, which is a kind of a separate parallel, I wouldn't say parallel internet, but a parallel phone book, let's say, is controlled by the United States government. It's controlled by ICANN, which is International Corporation for Number and Name Assigning or something like that. But I just say it stands for I Can Take Your Website because I'm the government. But yeah, they want to have that locked down. You know, they're the people that decide debates. You know, the thing is, if you did that, I guess you could do that. You could create a new altcoin, and you'd have to have some way to, here's what I think would be the main problem with that, would be the blockchain, the physical, you know, copy of the blockchain would be terabytes. It would be unbelievably big because so many people transact in .com, .edu, I just call them .icann domains. Everything
it
that's
would
not
be unfeasible,
.bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, it seems like that's where you, if there was any way you could go there, that's where you'd want to go, because that would make it impossible for anyone to take it down.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think if you didn't honor the legal controlled updating of deciding what goes where, you know, I mean,
so don't put your name on it. Just be anonymous.
Yeah, the main problem, I mean, first of all, that's not really needed. You don't really need a copy of the government controlled blockchain, government controlled phone book of it on a blockchain. I guess what you're suggesting is that you wouldn't, like, for instance, when, you know, some government agency seizes a website, they don't actually seize it. They just redirect where it goes to, and where it goes to is some government computer that shows some symbol with a bald eagle on it that looks all scary and says it's been seized, right?
And takes down your IP address, yeah, telling you that your noticing has been noted, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, in Soviet Russia, computer, you know, internet, what is it? I made up one time. It was, in Soviet America, internet surfs you. Yeah, something like that. But, I mean, I guess what you're saying is the advantage of doing the decentralized version of the existing ICANN database would be that you would not update it. Like, you would still point it to wherever the stuff served of the good guys, right?
Well, since I'm asking for pie in the sky, I want it updated. You know, I want it to be current at all times. But, you know, I don't know anything about it. I'm just saying what I'd want. When they came to shut it down, I would like them not to be able to touch the pointers so that it all keeps working.
The thing is that to do that with the methodology and functionality that you're describing, I believe would not be decentralized. It would have to be centralized. It could be decentralized in the sense that everybody has a copy of it like they do with the Namecoin blockchain, to use a .bit pointer like MeowBit. But somebody would have to be making a decision. A person or group of people would have to be making a decision of, okay, we don't accept this update. Like, you know, the Freedom Fiend site is now, you know, been seized by the Department of All Things, the Department of Making All Things Bad of the U.S. government. And we don't honor that, and we keep it pointing to wherever the files were before. That would require a person. The only way you could do it to not require a person that I can think of would be, it would never change. Like, when you register a domain name, it would always point to that IP address, and that wouldn't serve, you know, good people when they want to move to a different server or host because they don't like their current host.
Yeah, yeah.
The beauty of Namecoin is that it does it automatically. Like, you get the domain name and you register it, and you can update it yourself. There's no central authority. That has problems too with domain squatting, which BitShares, which I'm also involved with, has solutions for that. We'll talk about that when we get back.
All right.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com. This is the final segment of the Freedom Fiends for this evening. And so this is Michael Dean. We're going to talk a little bit more about this thing I'm trying to build, this Fiend Phone. And people, you know, the other critique I got was, well, you guys, you and Derek, this programmer, worked really hard on MeowBit and then just gave up. First of all, Derek did about, you know, $10,000 worth of work for about $1,000 that mostly came out of my pocket, because I also bought radio ads on other shows for that project, because I thought it was the most important thing in the world, and I still kind of think it's really important. But here's the thing, man. We didn't give up on it, and it's still out there, and the source code is still up on GitHub, and anybody can use it and develop it. The reason we didn't keep going with it, other than a lack of money, was that people really didn't adopt it, which is kind of mind-blowing to me, because everybody I know you know, everybody I know has a libertarian radio show. All my friends do. I have like 30 friends with a libertarian radio show or podcast, and probably 100 friends with a libertarian blog, you know, that's on some .com or something, or .edu or .me or something. And everybody on those blogs all day long, all they do is post things about the government did this, the government did that, the government took so-and-so's website. They took, you know, it's pretty bizarre that everyone spends so much time complaining about the internet, and people wouldn't take 1 hour and spend 6 cents to protect their internets, you know, to, if you're a webmaster, you know, for 6 cents worth of Namecoin, you can register a .bit address. You can get Meowbit for free and get the Namecoin wallet for free. For 6 cents, you can register your domain name, 6 cents worth of Namecoin. It's actually cheaper now because I personally drove down the price of Namecoin because it was kind of dead, and I brought it back to life by just yakking about it, and Derek and I making something to help it make more be more useful. And people started mining it again, and there ended up being a glut of it. So I drove the price of it down from $7 a coin to, I don't know, it's $1.50 a coin or something now. But, you know, I was just really surprised. I mean, like, you know, we had, you know, several hundred downloads of Meowbit, probably over 1,000 altogether. And, you know, personally, I only know like 6 or 8 people that actually set up .bit mirrors to protect their website. So the time just wasn't right for it, and most people would rather, I can't complain. The market didn't adopt it. We did our work. We did our work for liberty for like no money, almost no money, and, you know, tried to improve the world, and the world just wasn't ready to be improved. But I think good audio is something that people can wrap their head around more. So let's go back to, you had some questions about other ways to protect the internet. What were they, Randy?
Well, my first question was, and I apologize for not knowing much about this, but if the government takes down a website, do they just break the pointer, make the pointer, you know, the domain name point somewhere else, like to a government site, or do they go in and actually take away the site's IP address?
Well, kind of both. They basically a domain registration is two things. It's the domain name and the IP address or name servers it should point to. And, you know, as the domain owner, you can update that anytime you want. What happens when the government seizes a site is usually they just update it without your permission and point it to one of their servers that says this site has been seized.
But if you type in the IP address, will you go to the site where you want to go?
If the site's configured correctly, yeah. Sometimes they also go in and like steal the actual servers and stuff. But, you know, any smart person has off-site copies somewhere.
If they didn't take it down, how about having a search engine that just goes out and searches the whole internet and just collects IP addresses and not domain names? So if the system goes down, you can go in, type your searches, and it'll take you to the website that answers those searches.
Well, there's two problems with that, and there was one solution to that. The two problems with that, one is you would still need a person or at least a robot to decide whether or not to update, whether an update of an IP address is done by the website owner or by, you know, some government goon. The second thing is that whole search engine would be a single point of failure. They could take that down. There was a solution for that. There was a plugin for browsers that would route to the old one, and those people got a cease and desist and ignored it. But mainly, it just didn't get adopted, man. People would rather complain about tyranny than do anything about it, for the most part, in my experience. But I'm trying to encourage people to not take that tack and to do really simple, smart things they can do to protect their digital assets more than they do already. And there you go, man. That's a Freedom Fiends for you. That's another Freedom Fiends. Thank you for your service, Randy.
Good night, Michael. Thanks for having me with you tonight.
Good night and good luck.